Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. You know, we know that fresh fruits and vegetables are important to our health, but what do you do if you don't have access to them? Today we'll be talking with Will Allen. He's the founder and CEO of Growing Power, a national nonprofit organization making a big impact on bringing healthy, affordable food to communities. We'll talk about what they're doing and take a look at some of their programs. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions about Growing Power and community gardens. What's working in your area? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Will Allen joins us by phone. Will, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
It's great to talk to you, Larry.
Yeah, it's been a few years since you've been on, and it's amazing how Growing Power has expanded. And before we take a look at your programs, give us an overview of how you came to found this organization and where it's gone.
Well, we'll have to go back to 1993 when I bought the last remaining registered farm in the city of Milwaukee. And my goal, really, at that time was to sell my farm produce from my farm in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, and as a for-profit organization. And shortly after that, I started working with kids in the neighborhood, and my friends talked me into going into a nonprofit situation. So that's kind of how it started, and it's grown along a continuum to a farm, to multiple farms. We not only have our national headquarters, which is the historic farm, actually the last farm in the city. It was actually built back in 1920s.
Wow.
So in an area on Silver Spring Drive, kind of halfway between I-43 and Highway 45. So it's in a kind of strategic area. It's in a pretty much a food desert area. The closest grocery store is about 4 miles away, and we have the largest public housing project called Westlawn. It's 5 blocks away from us. So it was a good place to be able to bring fresh fruits and vegetables into that area because people just didn't have access to anything that was really you would consider good food.
Yeah. You must have had some obstacles. What were some of the obstacles you faced in the beginning?
Well, I mean, you know, here's an idea that when you look back 25 years ago, urban agriculture was not a real popular thing. So, you know, most people regarded agriculture, and many still do, as a rural type of activity. I come from a rural agricultural background, so I kind of understand why people think that way because, you know, we've always gotten our food from rural farms. But one of the things I wanted to do, because I like challenges, you know, I have come from an athletic career, a professional basketball player and so forth, and I kind of like challenges. So a lot of people would challenge me and say, oh, you can't grow enough food to change the dynamics of people's lives in the community. And that was kind of what drove me to do the things that we've done in terms of just scaling up a little bit by a little bit until we started doing other farms around the city and acquiring other space to grow on, like closed school sites and, you know, working with the sewage district, which had purchased a lot of land and being able to get that land and so forth. So that's how it kind of evolved with, you know, kind of this challenging thing to prove that it could be done and getting more people on board and really creating jobs for people also and working with youth, working with the schools and having a youth corps that we developed from kids from the neighborhood and then kids from outside of the neighborhood. And then we started getting requests from other cities around the country and outside of the country as we moved along this continuum. because people were passing on what we were doing via, you know, the internet and so forth, and pretty much word of mouth. We didn't have funding to do any, you know, promotional marketing this stuff that we were doing. So people were just spreading the word. And so that's how it developed. And we just started helping a lot of people with, along the way. Funding was always a big issue. You know, every month, every year, it was always a struggle to stay in business, as it always is with small nonprofits. We weren't like the YMCAs or the Boys Club or big organizations like that that had big funding mechanisms. We were really funded by folks from the community and outside of the community as we expanded. So.
Yeah, you know, I got a message on Facebook from Eric who says folks in Stevens Point have been inspired by you to convert an abandoned greenhouse in the city's downtown into a community food education center with a classroom, commercial kitchen, and greenhouse. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've worked with many groups like that around the country, and you know, one of my goals and our organization's goals was to inspire people to go into this because, for obvious reasons, we want to get good food into people's lives and we want to create some jobs for folks. And it's just a wonderful activity for young people and engaging the schools. So that's happening happily all over the country now. I mean, there's projects going on all over the country, that makes me happy.
You expanded into Chicago, didn't you? And those programs working?
Yeah, we have a wonderful project in Chicago. Of course, Chicago has a lot of problems with teens in Chicago, and we're working with teens. We work with about 1,000 teens a year in Chicago, and you know, there's a lot of problems from neighborhood to neighborhood. So we have 2 7-acre spaces in Chicago where we have a farmer training program, and we do some production ourselves there. But our group works with a lot of kids in Chicago that are funded by many different programs that they have in Chicago, because they want to get these kids off the street into a healthy activity. And what better activity than to learn where your food comes from, and from a health standpoint, many of these kids are suffering from so many ills that it's a very therapeutic thing for these kids that touch the soil. It just changes their whole outlook on life. I mean, realistically, a lot of these kids probably won't become producers, but they'll learn a lot about life, how to get up in the morning to be on time on a job. There's so many different things. You could probably come up with a brainstorm, 100 different things that kids learn from actually being involved in programs like that. And many of those kids come back the next year or for multiple years. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm telling you. And those kind of results, they're not... Well, they're food results, I guess, in a way, but there's a lot of sort of non-food results that sounds like you're getting from all this work, this wonderful work.
Yeah, I mean, we would love to grow more farmers, and because that's what we need, because when you look at our farmers' markets today, many of our farmers' markets aren't traditional farmers' markets anymore because they can't come up with enough farmers. Actual farmers to fill the stalls. So you go to these markets and they're selling all different kinds of things, from jewelry to, you know, knickknacks. If you go to a farmer's market today, I know there's a farmer's market here in Wisconsin where there's 100 vendors and only 6 actual producers. So, you know, if you look at all the box programs that are out there now, you know, from, I won't name them, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The ones that can order and have stuff shipped across the country. We don't necessarily know where that food comes from, you know.
Yeah.
But our whole focus is on local production. It's closer to the community, as close to the community as you can get, you know.
I think it's such a wonderful thing. Tell us about the results you're getting in terms of the garden itself, you know, since you first established your garden.
Well, you know, it was a 3-acre facility. We feed about 10,000 people from that facility.
Wow.
We have a retail store that brings in people. We also have a CSA-type program. We call it Market Basket, where people can pick up their bag of food weekly and pay for it by the week, because most low- and income folks can't afford to pay, you know, $500 up front for a chair or $250 for a half share or whatever. So that program has continued. I started it in 1995, and that program continues. And we work with the housing project, picking up waste from the housing project, which was a pilot project. And we wanted to prove, if you can do it at a pilot project and get people to put their waste into a small bucket, so that we can turn that into back into soil, composted, of course. That would be something that we could do in every community. And now Milwaukee has a larger project going in several zip codes and several aldermatic districts, a program similar to what we started quite a few years ago.
Yeah, and that's one of your core techniques of the growing power method, as you guys, composting. What are the other ones? Composting and year-round production.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we started doing when we started putting up hoop houses, is to be able to grow certain crops year-round, some winter hardy crops like spinach and kale and microgreens. Of course, we grow at our national headquarters, and all those winter crops that we can, about 40 of them that we grow in the wintertime, using compost heat. We don't use fossil fuels to heat those hoop houses, and we're able to do that on a lot of crops throughout the winter.
That is very cool. Will Allen, our guest today, a farmer, founder, and CEO of Growing Power Incorporated. He is recognized as a preeminent practitioner of urban agriculture in America and throughout the world. It's great to have him with us. You may have some questions for him or experiences to share. I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, or go to our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show, and we have a link on our Facebook page to Growing Power Incorporated as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45 today, Tim Campbell from the UW Environmental Resources Center will be talking about programs to help control aquatic invasive species, so I hope you can stay with us for that. Right now, we're taking a look at community food systems with Will Allen, farmer, founder, and CEO of Growing Power Incorporated. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And we have Christine on the line from Milwaukee. Let's see if we can get her up, Will. Christine, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. This is a great program. I have some questions.
Sure.
I own 3 duplexes on 61st and Silver Spring, and I'm wondering, I know Will's Garden Center is just down the street. I've driven past it a billion times and didn't even realize that there was this thing happening there, and I'm just wondering how I can help my tenants to get involved and get into the program, maybe get some good fresh vegetables, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. There are a number of ways to get involved. Of course, we have a lot of volunteers that come from corporations, from universities, UWM, and Alverno College and Mount Mary and all the colleges, Marquette University. From high schools, I just had a high school group a couple of days ago from Weston High School. They'd come and volunteer. They take a tour to see our aquaponics. We have a pretty large aquaponics system there to raise lake perch, working with the School of Freshwater Science, Fred Binkowski's group from UWM. So there's a lot to see, but then we put them to work, sifting soil for our worm castings. We have large worm casting systems and doing a lot of different things, filling trays because we turn over about 2,000 trays of microgreens a week. So there's always work on the farm to do. That's one way, but we also have a retail store. So folks from her area can come and purchase a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables there. Right now we're into a lot of different crops this time of the year. So there's a big diversity of things that they can purchase.
So there's opportunities there for sure. Christine, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Nancy in Door County, I'll turn to you next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I was excited to turn on the radio just now. I'm actually up in Door County on break. I live in the South Chicago area. I have been to Will Allen's 3-day workshops in Milwaukee, which were just wonderful on vermicomposting and these passive hoop homes, hoop houses that he talked about. Really, really neat, everything he's done. But what's happened is I'm a teacher. It's a low-income school. I've been in other subjects, and this school, middle school, believe it or not, just got this really fancy greenhouse, along with they did buy some tower gardens. And they're asking me this year to teach horticulture. And so I'm kind of scrambling. I do have some horticulture background, but, you know, I would love to connect with others for more. You know, this is middle school, low income. It, you know, it's not real supported just because, you know, people just don't really know what they have, what they're doing. But all this idea of a goal towards, you know, better learning about connecting with, I think, connecting with our food, connecting with nature, and, you know, getting people more self-sufficient and learning and excited, that's what I would love to do. I just sort of feel like I'm alone here and would love to connect with others who are doing or have done it.
Hmm. Well, something in the way of help for Nancy
sure.
here.
Sure, you can actually email me, it's will@growingpower.org, and we can engage you and help you with your project. I know what you're talking about, the Growing Towers. We do something a little bit different because I'm a soil-based farmer, so we use our soil that we grow our own soil and the worm castings that we use in our growing. So you can have multiple type systems that show the kids from hydroponic type systems that those grow towers use to actual soil-based farming indoors. So we could help you with that and pass on what we've learned because we're always learning something new. I mean, I go to California and do projects out there quite a bit, and I bring back information of how to replicate the temperatures in California inside a hoop house or inside greenhouses to be able to grow certain crops. Like, for example, we're now growing our berries, our raspberries and strawberries inside hoop houses, and we get twice the production that we get when we grow them outside. Something that I learned from Driscoll out in California, where I visited a 300-acre farm that was all hoop houses, and they didn't have a shutdown period. The berries produce year-round. So that's something that we can have raspberries from June through November. Ever-bearing variety. So we're always learning different things and passing those on. That's what we are all about as a nonprofit, is not to learn something or discover something and put it in some closet and hide it away, but to pass it on to whoever wants it, whether you're a home grower or whether you're a community garden or whether you're a mid-sized farmer or whoever you are, as long as you want that information, we pass it on.
So. Yeah.
Oh, that would be just wonderful. I will definitely email you, and everything you're describing just seems so wonderful and so important. And I definitely want, you know, having a chance teaching 4th through 8th graders is who will be coming through my classroom. You know, it's getting the opportunity to, you know, to share with young people, and I just think it's so important in our world in big picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Nancy, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And as you're listening in, you can join in too. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Will, you saw the value of aquaponics early on, I think. Maybe explain a little bit more about what it is and why it's a good system for what you do.
Well, you know, many of the commercial systems were very expensive, very high capitalization, and I developed a system that it's like a homemade system. It's a below-ground system. We lift the water to beds above, and gravity takes the water through plants to remediate the waste from the fish. It's a recirculating system similar to the commercial systems, but the cost is about 20% of what commercial systems. So we have a lot of large systems now at Growing Power, growing lake perch. We kind of cut our teeth over 20 years ago during tilapia, but, tilapia is not the fish of choice for Wisconsinites. It's lake perch, and of course we know what our lake perch problem is in the Great Lakes. There's a moratorium on commercially fishing for them, so it's hard to get lake perch, yellowtail lake perch at our fish fries. So it's the fish that we train a lot of folks to be able to grow. Starting out with small systems so that they can learn how to raise fish, because you don't want to start with a 10,000-gallon system like we have. You want to start with maybe a 700-800-gallon system and really learn how to do it, how to take care of the plants and figure out what plants grow best, what are the best remediatory plants to use in your system. And we have trainings for that. We've trained over 500 people over the last 10 years. Working with the School of Freshwater Science that got into aquaponics through working with us. So now there are thousands of people across the country and outside of the country doing aquaponics and using systems that are affordable for communities, because that's what we really want to do, is to have people to be able to raise healthy fish, clean fish without mercury and that indoors, inside buildings, inside hoop houses, to avoid contamination and so forth, to get those fish to folks that, you know, you can eat these fish almost every day if you want without some warning about how many pounds to eat, because they're clean fish.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Corey in Sussex, we'll turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello.
What's on your mind today?
My question is, I was wondering, I'm looking to get into urban farming and organic agriculture, and I'm just starting out and wondering how respected are these work classes and these, you know, these volunteer programs in the working world. If they're, you know, can you get a job in a greenhouse and just how respected they are.
Okay, so you're saying, will the workshop experiences and the internship experiences help you get a job in horticulture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Will, what do you think?
Well, there are jobs. We have a shortage of, as I said before, there are a huge shortage of farmers in this country that are growing on this level. That's not doing industrial farming, you know, row crop, soybeans, corn. We're talking about growing healthy food that we eat, things like greens and peppers and tomatoes and things like that. We have a shortage of those type of farmers, but it does take a lot of training. You don't become a farmer overnight. It's not like other professions. You have to learn a lot. If you're going to go out on your own and start your own farm, you need to have a plan. You need to have a project plan or a farm plan and then a business plan, which are two separate type things to get started. That's what I would recommend. But you need to find a training program to get engaged in. And you need to volunteer on farms or work as an intern. A lot of our farmers in the state of Wisconsin, which we have a lot of organic farmers in the state of Wisconsin, many of those folks didn't come from a farming background, but they took internships. They came out of college or high school or whatever, and they had this strong interest to learn how to farm. And I always tell people, yeah, it looks, you know, to see farmers doing this type of farming, it looks real, real sexy or whatever. But it's the hardest job I've ever had. I grew up on a farm, and it's the hardest thing. I've been a professional athlete, worked in the business world. Becoming a sustainable farmer, growing food without chemicals, is probably the hardest thing you can do. And if you scale it up and say, become a mid-sized farmer today, like I have farmer friends that farm 8,000 acres, that's considered a mid-sized farm. They're having labor problems because of the immigration policy. So you have to deal with a lot of different issues and the new rules, the GAP certifications and things like that to be able to sell your produce wholesale. So there's a lot of issues. I'm not trying to discourage anybody, but I'm saying you have to know a lot. And I think a lot of people have the premise that you can just go out, throw some seed in the ground, get a tractor and throw some seed in the ground, and you might have a good year, but then you might have four bad years. So it's not an easy thing to do. You have to pay your dues. You have to learn. That's really important. The good thing that's happening is many schools now are getting back into agriculture. Back in the day, we had almost every school had a curriculum for agriculture, and that's coming back today.
You know, and as in terms of, and kind of going along with what you just said, Will, and for Corey, for you, the center at the University of Wisconsin, there's a Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems.
Yes.
And there are, I think there may be, you might want to take a look at the CIAS, Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, as well, to provide some of the information that Will's talking about. So
What I'm hearing from Will is more the work and actually getting hands-on experience, not just classroom book work, is almost more valuable by people in the industry then, you know, I mean, let's say you go to horticulture for 4 years or you're actually working on a farm for 4 years, they're almost one and the same, you know, I mean.
Yeah, there is, but the Center for Integrated Ag Systems, I think you'll find opportunities there to get information about some of the things that he was talking about. He was talking about the management side of things, the growing information. There's a lot there. And of course, you want to be taking a look at Will's organization and what they're doing. You're also absolutely right that on the ground work is going to be extremely important. For one thing, just to give you an idea as Will says, how tough it can be to do.
So, yeah, and we have the extension services that are out there. extending what they have learned to communities and farmers and so forth. So, you can't totally learn how to farm sitting in a classroom. You're going to have to get out and take some of that knowledge you learned in the classroom and put it to practice and see what it works and learn about different soil types and so forth, because we're really talking about sustainable agriculture, natural farming, organic farming, because that's what we should be doing. I think that's what we're doing anyway, and I know a lot of my farmer friends are doing the same thing around the country.
Yeah. Thanks, Corey, good luck to you, and thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. You know, we're going to take some more calls, but I know running an organization like this takes money. How do you get your funding?
Well, over the years, we've been around for 25 years, so it's a very diverse funding stream from selling our own products to USDA grants, the competitive grant programs that we received from foundations like Kellogg and others, and local foundations like Milwaukee Foundation and others, and Bader Foundation. Those Potawatomi, those type places that you have to engage after you reach a certain stage in your development. But funding is always the tough thing, to be able to keep your organization afloat, especially as you add more employees, because you got to be able to train those employees and different programs that are usually not fully funded. So you're going to have to take from Peter to pay Paul in terms of taking some of the money you make off of selling your produce to putting your programs and so forth. So it's always a complicated thing. And to repeat those grants is very difficult because it's very competitive. There's so many different organizations today that are going after just a small pot of money. And with the change in administrations, we don't know what's going to be out there in the coming years. Every time they change an administration, it affects the funding sources from USDA.
Yeah. Nancy in Verona has something for us. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had actually two questions. And one was, I have a small bed and breakfast in Verona, and I've been trying to research getting into aquaculture so I can grow my own fish.
Yes.
And I haven't been having much luck connecting to resources that would be affordable for a very, very small scale.
Yeah, I mean, we have the aquaponics training. We train with the School of Freshwater Science from February each year through June to come to a class, and you actually learn how to build a system. It's a system, let's say, if you want to raise 300 lake perch, a 4x8 system would produce, a 700-gallon system would produce about 300 lake perch. So, again, you're going to have to, fish aren't like plants. If a plant goes without water, it may wilt, and you water it, it comes back. When fish start going south, it's really hard to save them. So it is a bit risky.
Mm-hmm.
To get involved. One of the things that we're trying to create is a hatchery for lake perch. It's hard to get lake perch fingerlings, but there's a project in Green Bay that I've been helping with Jimmy Pandle and a group called a Farmery in Green Bay, and they're going to build a hatchery there, working with myself and others through the Freshwater Science, University of Green Bay, and that'll be the first real indoor hatchery in the state of Wisconsin. So they'll be able to sell fingerlings to different groups around the state, and that's what's been missing.
Oh, very cool.
Well, now where are those classes?
They're in Milwaukee at our facility. We spend one day at the university and 2 days at our facility actually building an aquaponic system. So when you go back to your residence, you'll be able to build that system.
So it's 3 days, really.
Yeah, it's a three-day
training.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I have another unrelated question, and that's about very small-scale hemp, growing your own hemp for seed. Are you doing any experimentation with that?
We have, but I know there are people that that are doing that from around the country. So I know for a long time it wasn't legal, and I may be wrong, but I think it's legal now, but I'm not sure.
Oh, something to look into.
That's something that we haven't engaged in.
Nancy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Nick in South Bend, your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Larry. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Thanks. I just wanted to give a huge shout-out to WPR. I'm a truck driver. I just started 6 months ago. And not to be a derogatory term, but the public radio in most of the country is quite pitiful. Anyways, thank you so much, Will, for doing what you do. That's so amazing. I was wondering about the economics of aquaponics. If somebody wanted to, say, get a system going in their basement or something, which I think I've heard of, what are we looking at for profit and whatnot?
Well, I think on that scale, it's more of a personal thing that you're going to grow some fish for friends and yourself to have a source of protein for yourself or friends or family, extended family, and that sort of thing. I don't know if you can cash flow a system that small. But it's a piece where you can learn how to, if you decide you want to make a bigger investment, you first need to learn how to keep fish alive in those smaller systems before you go to, say, a 1,000-gallon system and so forth. So we're working with the university. We've done some studies with the university, economic studies and so forth, to actually see how many fish it would take to, say, create one job, one person operating a system.
Yeah.
And, using that as a way of saying we need to do, say, if you're going to do a 100,000-gallon system, how many people would you need to run that system and make a profit, or what would your cost be for feed and that sort of thing? So we're still working on some of those numbers, but there have been some work that's already done that we're going to be able to pass on to folks, because that's the whole thing about this type of smaller scale agriculture. Can you make a living? What does it take to make a living for say a family? If a family wants to go leave their job that they're not happy with and they want to start a farm, what is it going to take? What are the models? What are the costs? All of that stuff. And, there's a lot of stuff out there, a lot of books and periodicals and so forth, but you really have to kind of figure this stuff out yourself, even though you can get a lot of information. But you got to, I'm not saying don't believe what's out there, but I've written books also. So you want to make sure that before you leave your day job, I always tell people that don't leave your day job until you're absolutely sure that this is something you want to get engaged. And the thing that really the most important thing is passion. You don't have passion, total true passion. You might like something that's different than having passion, because some really bad things could happen to you along the way, where you have a bad year, you have bad weather, if you're growing outside, so many different things. You have a bug infestation that wakes you out. If you're not doing an integrated, diversified system, you're growing one or two crops, and they don't turn out for you, you're out of business.
Yeah.
So there's so many things to learn, and before you just make that decision, I never tell anybody, just go jump into it like you're jumping into a pond or a swimming pool. It's something you really have to have this deep, deep passion for. And not everybody gets in this, has this deep passion, and they don't stay in this very long.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. I've seen so many people come into this, no matter how much money they throw at it. That's not what it's all about. You want a whole lot of money at something if you don't have the passion.
And Nick, thank you so much on that. No, we have to close. Will, it's always uplifting to be able to talk with you about your system. I know Nick and others can go to your, what's your website again?
Our website is growingpower.org. You can reach us there, or you can email me at will@growingpower.org.
And growingpower.org, you've got your books, and that I'm sure that you've written up there for ordering, and a whole lot of more information. So thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure to talk about farming and try to help people. That's what I'm all about, and our organization's all about.
Yeah. Well, thanks again. Appreciate it. Will Allen, farmer. Now, there's a guy with passion. He's got a lot of passion. He's a farmer, founder, and CEO of Growing Power, Inc., recognized as a preeminent practitioner of urban agriculture in America and really throughout the world. I hope I can get him. He's always such a busy guy. He's running here and there all the time, doing a whole lot of good in a lot of different places. But it's always fun to visit with him. Well, we're going to turn our attention next to aquatic invasive species and the fight against them. Tim Campbell, our guest next here on the Ideas Network.